Let's talk about what you are and where you came from, and then you can decide how quickly you want to get to where you're really going. We'll begin by telling you a little story, courtesy of information in Jay's course, that would have otherwise remained oblivious to you. Don't kid yourself. It's a privilege for you to learn these things. Without Jay, they would remain forever unconscious. They will still be mostly unconscious even after you hear them. As we proceed, at least you're going to have a chance of finding your way, with the help of the Holy Spirit, through your veils of forgetfulness and back to where you really belong. Symbols can't really express what appeared to happen just before the making of the universe. The magnitude of the transtemporal mind is much too great to capture with words. We can, however, give you a glimpse of what's really behind the so-called fall of man and what many have called original sin. We can tell you what it was that resulted in the event that you refer to as the Big Bang. No scientist will ever be able to trace anything back before that, except in theory. But it is possible to remember the very beginning and to change your mind about it. It's not necessary, however, for you to remember the very beginning now, because you will really change your mind by forgiving the symbols of this beginning. Thus, your salvation always has and always will depend on decisions you are making right now. Would you like to proceed, Artin?
Before the beginning, there were no beginnings or endings. There was only the eternal always, which is still there and always shall be. There was only an awareness of unflawed oneness, and this oneness was so complete, so awe-striking, and unlimited in its joyous extension, that it would be impossible for anything to be aware of something else that was not itself. There was and is only God in this reality, which we will refer to as heaven. What God creates in his extension of himself is called Christ. But Christ is not in any way separate or different than God. It is exactly the same. Christ is not a part of God. It is an extension of the whole. Real love must be shared, and the perfect love that is shared in God's universe is beyond all human comprehension. Humans appear to be part of the whole, but Christ is all of it. The only possible distinction between Christ and God, if a distinction was possible, would be that God created Christ. He is the author. Christ did not create God or itself. Because of their perfect oneness, this doesn't really matter in heaven. God has created Christ to be exactly like God, and to share his eternal love and joy in a state of unencumbered, boundless, and unimaginable ecstasy. Unlike the concrete, specific world you appear to be in now, this constant and enthralling state of awareness is completely abstract, eternal, unchanging, and united. Christ then extends itself by creating new creations, or simultaneous extensions of the whole, which are also exactly the same in their perfect oneness with God and Christ. Thus Christ, like God, also creates, because it is exactly the same as God. These extensions do not go inward or outward, because in heaven there is no concept of space, there is only everywhere. The result of all this is the endless sharing of perfect love, which is beyond understanding. Then something appears to happen, which, as in a dream, doesn't really happen. It just appears to. For just an instant, for just one inconsequential fraction of a nanosecond, a very small aspect of Christ appears to have an idea that is not shared by God. It's kind of a what-if idea. It's like an innocent wondering in the form of a question, which unfortunately is followed by an apparent answer. The question, if it could be put into words, was, "What would it be like if I were to go off and play on my own?" Like a naive child playing with matches who burns down the house, you would have been much happier not to find out the answer to that question. For your state of innocence is about to be seemingly replaced by a state of fear and the erroneous, vicious defenses that this condition appears to require. Because your idea is not of God, he does not respond to it. To respond to it would be to give it reality. If God himself were to acknowledge anything except the idea of perfect oneness, then there would no longer be perfect oneness. There would no longer be a perfect state of heaven for you to return to. As we will see, you never really left anyway. You're still there, but you have entered into a nightmare state of illusion. While you have traveled only in dreams, God and Christ, who are always one, have continued as they always did and always will, completely unaffected by what Jay refers to in his course as the tiny mad idea of separation. In this cosmic instant of seeming individuality, and no matter how attractive you may think individuality is, it is nothing but separation. There seems to be a tiny aspect of Christ that is now aware of something else. That is duality. Now, instead of oneness, you have two-ness. Before, there was the perfect oneness of heaven and nothing else. That is non-duality, or non-two-ness. That is still reality. There is not really more than one thing, but now something different seems to be going on for you. There seems to be God and something else. That is the illusion of duality, and the world of multiplicity and the endless subjects and objects you perceive in it are merely symbolic of separation. While you may still try to create, you cannot really create without the power of God, so everything you make eventually falls apart. Each time a baby appears to be born into this world, it is merely reliving the time when it seemed to leave its perfect environment in God, where all was nirvana, and it was completely taken care of and provided for, and then suddenly found itself slapped in the face by a seeming reality that was a living hell by comparison. You may think of birth as a miracle, but babies don't come into this world smiling, do they?
They come in crying and screaming.
Yes. The mind that is relieving the seeming separation has actually fallen asleep and is dreaming an idle, insignificant dream or nightmare. Because anything that seemed to be apart from heaven would have to be symbolic of an opposite to heaven. It would thus seem to include opposite characteristics. Once again, let's not get too far ahead of ourselves. We still have some explaining to do about your development from a seemingly separate mind into a universe of bodies, and why it feels so real to you and appears to be.
There's no doubt we believe we're experiencing reality here.
Absolutely. You must be shown the way out of this experience. Your asleep-at-the-wheel mind doesn't know it, but it's going to wake up in the equivalent of a cosmic instant. That is because the voice for God and heaven, which we will refer to as the Holy Spirit, is still with you to remind you of the truth and call you to return. This fail-safe memory of what you really are can never be lost, making an awareness to the reality of heaven completely inevitable. However, this memory can be seemingly delayed by unwise choices in the dream. Unwise choices have been made by you all along. You have the power to choose the memory and strength of God or something else instead, and if you really examine your thoughts, you will find that you're usually choosing something else instead. That is what the part of your mind that chooses did immediately after the seeming separation. Out of shock, fear, and confusion, it made a series of unwise choices that resulted in you appearing to be here. You still don't realize that given the awesome power of the mind, certain choices made by you could end the seeming separation, and could have at any time. That doesn't mean it's going to be easy at this point, but it does mean that you are capable of accomplishing it, with some help. Make no mistake, in order to really accept God's helper, the Holy Spirit, you must begin to trust God. You cannot trust Him until you recognize that it is not Him, but you, who is responsible for your experiences. You will feel guilty until you understand that this world is not real, and that nothing has really happened. That doesn't mean you shouldn't act responsibly in the illusion. It means you must understand certain things in order to apply the true forgiveness that enables the Holy Spirit to help you the most. God could not have created this world. It would not be in His nature. He is not cruel. And as Jay points out to you, if this were the real world, God would be cruel. For no father could subject his children to this as the price of salvation and be loving. Happily, this is not the real world, and God is not cruel. That's why we want to emphasize a vital point for students of the coming millennium, even if you think we stress it too often. Everything just described that was not the perfect oneness of heaven, and anything that has appeared to happen since then, has absolutely nothing to do with God. The idea of separation, as well as your subsequent decisions, are things that God is totally unconcerned about. The events in a dream are of no consequence, simply because they're not really happening. Although it appears to you to be very real and often terrible, your universe is nothing but idle, miscreated thought, and energy is nothing but projected thought. I believe we've also made it clear that matter is just a different form of energy. Being without the power of God, all your mind can do is seemingly divide and subdivide and then attempt to glorify the result. Yet, to review, you are really still safe in heaven, and because what you are seeing is not true, you're not really able to hurt yourself, even if you dream you're being hurt or even killed. In fact, you are able to awaken and continue with the perfect oneness of heaven exactly as you did before. But your mind must be trained to be dominated by the thoughts of the Holy Spirit instead of your ego. This requires the ability to make decisions that reflect the Holy Spirit's thought system instead of your own.